Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Monday, March 25th. I'm your host, Magnus Teeble. Joining me today on the program are...
It's Peter Raymond Haskell.
And Stephen Fan.
A little off mic, but he's here in the studio with us. Got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about Brian Mulroney.
And what the truth is instead of this love fest. I mean... I'm 61, so Magnus, you never say how old you are. You remember a
few things. I remember Brian Mulroney.
How bad he was, and maybe you liked him in the beginning. I don't know about that one.
So we'll be talking about the other side of Brian Mulroney. We'll also be talking a bit about Crab Park. Stephen Fan is here. What do you got for us today?
I'm here to talk about X or Dice. As the choreographer is Quebecois, it's a modern dance, like kind of a ballet situation that I had the good luck to view on Friday, and I really enjoyed it. It was a good time.
Awesome. So, and what else we got? We got talk a bit about Israel-Palestine, and we have, if we have time, we'll see how it goes, a segment from Rendezvous Francophonie. This is the month to celebrate the French language around the world, and we have a presentation, well, not presentation, but an interview on that as well. So this morning, down at Crab Park in Vancouver, the Parks Board is starting a process that they call a cleaning up of the encampment there. You may or may not know that we've covered it several times here on the program. That there is a homeless encampment at Crab Park, which is on the foreshore of Burrard Inlet, right at the top of Main Street in Vancouver. And that camp has been there for almost 3 years, I think, now. And it has was set up in the wake of the dismantlement or the decampment of the Strathcona homeless camp in Strathcona Park in East Vancouver. And through a sort of legal process, the Parks Board was trying to remove the camp, and the campers mounted a challenge to that action, and they won in court. And through that process, they became the only legal encampment in Canada. They are protected under human rights law. And allowed to stay there. Ever since that time, there's been kind of an uneasy relationship between the Parks Board and the campers. And that is something we've talked about in the past. This morning, what's happening down at Crab Park is that the Parks Board, with the support of city workers and the police, are doing what they're calling... a cleanup of the park, and what that proposal is that they are going to move all the campers and the encampment from its current location, which is sort of on a small point right where there's a bit of a pier at the west end of the park. They're going to move all the campers out of there to clean up the area, and are moving them to a temporary location elsewhere in the park. But there's a lot of controversy about this, and the people, the campers, and the advocates for the campers, are not happy with the process, and very suspicious of what the ultimate intentions of the Parks Board are. They put out an open letter, which you can find online and sign. But I'm just going to read a few sections from that. And Peter, you were just down at the park yesterday.
I was there on Sunday. I was briefly there.
Yeah.
Around the area, and I was a bit surprised. I heard on the radio later that they're asked to leave by midnight, because I just talked to them. I said, oh, I'm glad you're still operating here. It was very short. Like, it's kind of serious, you know. I saw the tents there. I was a bit surprised they were asked. Are they asked to leave now? Are they gone?
Well, that's happening this morning. I'm not totally up to the moment on what's happening down at the park right now, but I know that the city was going to go in there and start working on things, removing things this morning. I'm going to read a bit from the open letter that's being put forth by the Crab Park Tent City. And this is to quote, if the city of Vancouver goes forward with their plans, the Crab Park Tent City in its current form will be destroyed. It will be replaced by a city and nonprofit managed tent city in which no new residents will be allowed to live. Instead, park rangers, backed by the VPD, will determine who's allowed to live in the tent city based on who they assert is currently living there. This level of control and surveillance will restrict new and returning residents from finding a safe home in Crab Park, ultimately pushing everyone out. This is also why the structures in the current city are being destroyed as part of this cleanup. Cleanup in quotes. It's to push people out. And while the city is adamant that this is not a decampment, there are emails dated July 4th, 2023, that the city, park board, and the province have been coordinating on resolving Crab Park. Resolving Crab Park for months. This is a decampment. People's homes and communal spaces are being destroyed. This is why the First Nations Leadership Council also opposes the Parks Board plan, saying they are nothing other than a forced eviction. And all of this is occurring while the Crab Park residents have a case before the BC Human Rights Tribunal about the Park Board's failure to provide basic survival services. The city is citing serious health and safety concerns to justify the destruction of the homes of unhoused people. I'm going to skip along because it's a fairly long letter, and I don't want to go through all of it. It continues. We believe that the city of Vancouver is calling its plan a cleanup, as it creates an easy and sympathetic narrative to disguise what will be a slow, coercive, and many week long decampment. They are worried about public relations as opposed to respecting the rights of unhoused people. A key recommendation from the Federal Housing Advocates' recently released report Upholding Dignity and Human Rights is that people living in encampments must play a leading role in decision-making processes that affect them. The residents of Crab Park have not played a leading role in the decision-making process around this cleanup. It is also important to note that the confirmed... If there had... There would be no mass eviction of residents from the tent city. No structures would be destroyed. Residents would be paid as peers to do the cleanup themselves. A detailed plan of the cleanup would have been given to residents and signed by all parties. An idea posed by residents to which the park board responded, we disagree. An idea proposed by residents. All of this and more of the residents' wishes for this cleanup can be found on pages 34 and 37 of the city's confirmed plan document. It is important to note that the confirmed plan states that if the resident refuses to leave their home in the Crab Park Tent City, then they may need to be escorted out of the designated area by the VPD. Police power is not required for cleaning. It is required to displace people by force from their homes when they are unwilling to leave. This is a decampment. We call for the city, and we call, this is the Crab Park residents from their open letter. We call for the City of Vancouver and the Vancouver Park Board to halt the halt the decampment. Number two, allow residents to lead and orchestrate a cleanup themselves. To have a written plan that will be signed by residents. Not force anyone to move from their homes in Crab Park. This means no VPD. Not force people to put the belongings in storage. Not to destroy no parks. No structures in Crab Park, to allow unhoused people seeking a safe place to set up a home to stay in the Crab Park Tent City, regardless of whether they are currently living there or not. So, as of this morning, according to news reports, and your visit yesterday, the Parks Board is moving in today to start the process of removing the existing encampment. You said you talked to a few people down there yesterday.
Oh, it's very brief. I mean, yeah. it's a very serious thing. I saw some people in a certain area, and it had like a table. So I said, oh, I'm glad to see that you're still here doing this. And they kind of were, I'm glad to hear someone said that. And just kind of briefly, and I just looked at it. That was it.
Yeah, we've talked to about the encampments a number of times. Most recently, I talked to Clint Brandon down at the camp itself about living in the camp and how they operate and what the conditions are like. A really interesting interview, and you can find it on our on the CGSF website if you go and look for episodes under the. Under the Speak Up program, you can find it there. But you know, the camp there has run itself, as I say, for about 2.5 years now. Last count, there are probably about 50 people living there, and it provides a fairly safe place. One of the things we know from previous decampments or removal of encampments in the city is there is not a comprehensive and effective solution for housing people who are currently currently unhoused. There are lots of problems with the housing that is often offered, everything from not allowing people to keep their pets to restrictive conditions, not allowed to have guests, all sorts of things that make some of the offered housing situations really problematic. And obviously, if comprehensive and effective solutions were available, we wouldn't have quite such a unhoused population as we do here in Vancouver and elsewhere across the country. You look like you got a comment there.
Maple Ridge a few years ago had an encampment, mm-hmm. and there was actually a fire caused. And I think I don't think there has been a fire caused at Crab Park. But what's I think difference between what happened in Maple Ridge a few years ago was that was sort of in a residential area. This Crab Park one is basically isolated. I mean, And actually, when I went there Sunday, it seemed one reason is if worse comes to worse, was that people may feel uncomfortable going to there and be denied Crab Park. But that's not the worst thing that could happen. Understand that there's a tent city there. But when I was there, actually, it was there was some kid playing on the playground. It wasn't like. It was taking them away from people going there. But since it's an isolated place, I think it's just ideal, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm just going to comment in with a statistic, which is that back when I used to work a little bit in development, the number that was cited back then was a single unit of social housing, which is what really kind of supportive housing is, costs approximately 27 times as market rate housing. Mm-hmm. So this is one of these situations where, you know, there's a perpetual shortage of mm-hmm. supportive housing and, you know, like, therefore many more people end up being unhoused than could be housed by the province or the state or whatever. And I think that's kind of the fundamental driver of the shortage of social housing that they need to look at. Why is it, you know, is there some way to make it not so cost prohibitive? Because when they had, you know, like, for example, the pilot in Vancouver with supportive housing, the modular thing,
yep.
was pretty successful. And that was meant to be cheaper than normal kind of supportive housing. And even then, that cost, you know, like $600,000 per unit or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think the government needs to look at ways to make the dollar go a little bit further, because ultimately there's only so much money that could go around.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think there's a range of housing needs that are in place. You know, there's definitely some people who need a lot of support, other people who don't. And I think one of the things when we talk about housing is people often talk a lot about the cost of setting it up. you know, it costs this much money to build it and it costs that much money to do this. One of the things they often don't talk about when it comes to housing is that once it's in place, and again, I'm talking about a variety of different kinds of housing types here, is that people are ultimately paying rent, right? And that becomes income over time.
Imputed rent, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I live in a housing co-op, right?
Yeah.
And it cost whatever it was, you know, it's a building with 100 units, and it cost, I think, $35 million to build it, right?
Right.
So that's, whoa, $35 million, that's a lot of money, you know?
Yeah.
But it costs similar amounts of money to build any kind of housing. But
yeah.
The thing is, you know, once our co-op's up and running, we pay a mortgage. We're paying back that money every month over the duration of a mortgage. And you know, after, I think it's 35 years or something like that, that mortgage will be paid off. But the building's still there. People will still be living there. People will still be paying a housing charge to live in that building.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go, oh, well, we're not paying that mortgage anymore. Everybody gets their rent dropped. That's not how it's going to work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the people living there will continue to pay rent. They'll probably refinance the mortgage.
The
and now that money, now that building, after, you know, after initially paying off its mortgage, is now actually making money for the province, or in this case, BC Housing. That can be then further reinvested. You know, I mean, building housing, and you know, definitely there's the situation of, you know, individuals who need a lot of support. You know, it's a real supportive housing, so there's a lot of additional costs besides the existence of the building.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes we focus way too much on the initial costs and forget that for a lot of different housing types, you know, it's like any other, you know, that initial cost isn't, it's not really a cost, it's an investment, and then that money comes back over time.
Yeah, so I think especially with co-ops,
mm-hmm.
Whenever they pay off the mortgage, then the cycle starts again because the buildings have a finite life. So they usually last about 60 years or a little bit longer. And then obviously once the mortgage is paid off, then they spend the next 30 years preparing the money for the rebuilding.
Yeah.
So again, this is a continual investment. I think one thing that's interesting to me in terms of what you mentioned about kind of like continual life cycle costs. I recently heard from a guy, like a senior, who is living in Port Moody, sort of like the unbuilt towers, and the entire tower flooded, 28 stories flooded. And so 28 stories of people are forced to move off their homes, and this is obviously going to put pressure on the rental market. Like it's, and I think that's happening a lot with condos now, kind of like water issues, flooding issues, quality issues. And that's also a question that has to be addressed as well, kind of like.
Yep, definitely happens to all housing. One thing I was going to mention about specifically about Crab Park, and just to follow up what you were saying, Peter, is people may have this idea that, you know, if they're going to go to Crab Park, it's going to be full of tents and not useful. But the encampment part of the park is tucked away in one sort of corner, off at the side. You can go down to that park and wander around and have your kids play in the playground, and not be affected by the park at all. It in no way, you know, prevents you from people from using or enjoying the park. I mean, if people do feel discomfort around it, I mean, I guess the one thing I'd say is that, you know, it, as I mentioned before, it's sort of tucked over in this corner at a little point where there's a pier which people would be using for fishing or whatnot off that pier. And if you aren't comfortable walking through the camp, you might be denied the use of that. But most of the park is big open lawns, some playgrounds, some nice benches fronting a little beach. And despite what people think about camps and campers, you know, they keep to themselves. They're not going to come over and bug you. They know, they sort of understand that they need to be able to be respectful and get along with other park users to avoid drawing problems to themselves. And as we can see with the, you know, the cleanup, as it's called, happening today, that they can't completely avoid bringing, you know, encountering problems dealing with the authorities, but, you know, they're not out looking for trouble. So all that's happening today. You can find this I think your best bet is simply to Google an open letter in support of the Crab Park Tent City, and you'll find a Google Doc where you can add your signature in support of it, or look it also up through Facebook, and you can find the copy of this. A lot of the information in there, there's appendices linked to the document, which gives more information about some of the stuff they talk about in there. And we'll be following this story.
No, man, can I do a quasi-news story involving me? Just shortly. Actually, the Vancouver Institute had their last lecture for the season, and they had the chief executive officer and executive director of the Vancouver Art Gallery. And as you know, they're going to have a new one.
Mm-hmm.
I passed out about 5 minutes into the lecture. It was a handout. And it says a few other things. I want the new Vancouver Art Gallery not built, but instead a progressive homeless shelter built on the actual site.
Yeah.
So, and it was a bit longer than that. It had some other things I was saying. But I passed it out, and there was a bit of a kerfuffle. Because my side of the story is that I was very angry about what's happening with the new Vancouver Gallery. A lot of money being spent on this. We don't even have a progressive homeless shelter. And so I knew I was going to be angry if I was going to talk with questions afterwards. So I decided to have a photocopy sheet. Well, actually, you cut it up in three parts, mm-hmm. so I don't spend that much money doing it. And I was silently 5 minutes into the talk, and then they said I couldn't do it, and then I got a bit tuffled about it. So that's a news story you only hear on CJSF that happened to me Saturday.
I'm sure you're not the only person who thinks that.
Anyway, I just wanted to say
I mean, I love the art gallery. I go down there, but, you know, I also think, you know.
Well, they got a great location. You know, Arthur Erickson, who was the architect of those law buildings, and that was the old courthouse.
Yeah.
So his concept was that the old courthouse becomes an art gallery.
Yeah.
They were collaborating, so we need to have an art gallery here. It's only been there a little over 40 years. There's nothing wrong with that location for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's prime.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Magnus wasn't expecting this morning, right. But he got a bit something extra.
Excellent. Okay, we are. We got some music for you. This is Sylvia Tyson from a newly released collection. Not new music, but new a new collection. This track is called Sweet Agony.
Come to me, sweet. I am ready to fall in love again if I can have that ecstasy. I'll take my chances with the pain love gives, or it takes away. Oh, love can hurt, or it can heal you. It's a gamble we all take, and we live with our mistakes. It's both a curse and a rescue. Is love steadfast, or is it fleeting? Lifetime devotion, or random meeting? We're all floundering fools in a game with no rules. What magic makes it worth repeating? Is love steadfast, or is it fleeting? Like lifetime devotion or random meeting. We're all floundering fools in a game with no rules. What magic makes it? Words repeating, come to me, sweet agony. I am ready to fall in love again. It's a gamble we all take, and we live with our mistakes. It's both a curse and a rescue. Both a curse and a rescue.
That was Sylvia Tyson and Sweet Agony. All right, let's look at the weather here coming up for this week. It certainly was a beautiful day yesterday out and really nice this morning. But the forecast calls for the clouds to move in, and there will be a 40% chance of showers starting this afternoon and more this evening. Bit of sun tomorrow before the clouds come in again, with showers and periods of rain continuing through Wednesday and Thursday. And then things get a little more sunny looking starting on Friday, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty nice weekend with highs up into the mid-teens. Stephen Fan is here with his arts report from your escapades this weekend. Tell us what you're up to.
Absolutely. So on Friday, I had the good luck to attend a performance called X, or I should say Dies. It's a kind of a modern ballet, kind of a dance situation. I wouldn't necessarily apply to the label of ballet. It's 55 minutes long.
Yep.
Took place at Vancouver Playhouse, which is a wonderful venue, by the way. And it's the choreographer, the organizer of the whole thing, is a guy called, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to pronounce the name correctly, Guillaume Cote, I'm just going to say, actually, it's fine because he's perfectly bilingual. He's a fascinating person. He's a former ballerina at the National Ballet of Canada, but he's originally from Northern Quebec. He's from sort of remote Northern Quebec, and he went to essentially a ballet boarding school at age 11 at the National Ballet in Toronto, and he's been formed by this experience of a partial estrangement from his homeland, and also kind of inculcation in a slightly different culture. And so that's why the ballet/dance performance is based on the theme of Odysseus from ancient Greek myth. It's about the process of coming home. And I had an extended conversation with him over Zoom about what this coming home meant. And we kind of talked about the way in which home is not necessarily a physical place. And I'm sure that's especially the case for students such as, you know, at places like such as SFU. Home might be like a mental place, might be like a psychological place, might be a social definition. And we kind of just talked about the way that the dance kind of explores that theme. Mm-hmm. And because the fluidity of human movement, kind of the way the grace of it is really good for exploring emotions. And the great thing about using an existing myth like Odysseus is that the contours of the story are generally well known to everyone, but the emotional resonances can be reinterpreted every now and then in new and different ways. And I think given his background, given his own story, It's kind of fascinating how he reinterpreted it with the human form. You know, how do you express the emotions of sorrow, of loss, of estrangement, and of reunion at the end?